You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show provides a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with General Francis Allen, the Canadian military's second-in-command, the Vice Chief of the Defense Staff. Francis, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
General, can you tell us about your early years? Where did you grow up and what did your family do?
So I was the child of military parents. So my mom and dad met when they were both in the military. My mom was a weather girl. My dad was a pilot. So I spent my life growing up moving around from base to base. And so I guess familiarity with moving around and the demands of certainly a family from a military perspective was something that I had grown up around and felt fairly comfortable with.
So any countries outside of Canada in your youth?
Yeah, I lived in Germany for 4 years when I was sort of between the ages of 7 and 11. And then I actually finished high school in Brussels, Belgium. My father was working at NATO.
So do you speak French and German as well a bit or?
Well, no, I speak French because I'm a member of the Canadian Armed Forces and bilingualism is incredibly important to us. So we all learn the language that's not our mother tongue. And I took German in university at Queen's, but I've got to tell you, it's mostly like, how can I get to the market? You know, how much does this cost? that's about the extent of my German these days.
So it's interesting is I have some students who were, you know, moms or dads were ambassadors. And some of them adopt that lifestyle. Other ones go, I'm never moving in my life. So clearly you responded positively to the experience of being always the new girl in the school. Though I guess as part of the armed forces, it's not as bad.
Well, you know, certainly at that time, I had two sisters as well. So, you know, every time you move somewhere, your sisters are always, you know, your best friends for a period of time until you make some other friends. And then you can go back to, you know, having disdain for your sisters. I have to tell you, I love my sisters. So, but, you know, that's how it is growing up. And so I think I was familiar with the connection, reconnection aspect that is part of military life. Although I certainly, you know, did not know what that was when I joined as much as I may have thought that I was familiar with what that was.
I'm just curious, did your sisters end up in the military or did they go to other paths?
No, well, my eldest sister, Tressa, she's an aerospace engineer. She was in the military. She just retired 2 years ago now, maybe 1 year ago, and is now a public servant. Working for D&D. And my youngest sister did not ever join the military. She's an archivist at Queen's University.
Okay. What did you want to do as a kid? Do you remember, you know, in elementary or high school, was there any kind of dream you had at the time?
You know, I would say my early thoughts of a career when I was very young, I wanted to be a telephone operator. Don't ask me why. I just thought it seemed kind of cool. You got to talk to a lot of people. But I would say nothing, you know, drew me like some people have a passion towards, you know, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a veterinarian. For me, I didn't have a single profession that was pulling me, but I loved learning.
Interesting. Is that an important thing today?
Loving to learn? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think if we don't learn in some aspect of our lives every day, we stagnate and you stop being open to the environment around you if you can't seek out or be open to new information.
You're listening to the CEO Series and I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Today, we're sitting down with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff and the military's second in command. I was going to ask you what you learned in 2022, but given it's a pandemic, working from all that, if, you know, everybody's learning about what's going on. Clearly, you're a leader today, General. You don't get to the level of where you are unless you're a leader year after year after year. When did you first see yourself as maybe, Francis, maybe I'm a leader, you said to yourself?
You know, I don't know that I have ever said that about myself. And it really wasn't until I joined the military that, the importance of leadership, what does it mean to lead a group, what the responsibilities that come with leading, really that I thought about from a, you know, started to crystallize around the thinking around leadership. Before that, you know, I was a member of a sports team, I was a babysitter, I was a daughter, I was a sister, but never thought of myself in those particular terms. It was in joining the military that the thinking, I think, around leadership and your responsibilities and its importance, I think, started to come together for me.
What did you study in university?
Oh, well, I started in physics at the University of Calgary and then realized that physics wasn't quite for me. So I switched to pure math and then realized that pure math was very theoretical with rings and fields and that sort of thing. And so then I switched to statistics, which of course is much more applied. It's a much more hands-on type of math. And so I graduated from Queen's University with a BSc honors in statistics.
Our son just finished physics at McGill, so I'm slightly scared. Like those three subjects are very, you know, very clearly you have a very logical mind.
Well, you know, I had amazing teachers. I think teachers make all the difference in the world. My physics teacher was brilliant and he made physics interesting and alive. And that's why I decided to start to start my science degree in physics. But then as you learn a little bit more and you get exposed to more, I think you sort of find the path that works best for you.
What was your first job at a university?
Well, you know, I joined the military before I went to university. So I was in the regular officer training program going to civilian university. So at 17 years old, I joined the military. So my first job, I think, was, you know, beyond babysitting, was cleaning houses at the embassy in Brussels. It's between people moving in and out. So my first job after university was actually the military.
Why the military? I mean, given your parents were in the military and that you joined at a young age, but what drew you to the military when you were 16, 17, 18 years old and kept you there?
Yeah, you know, what drew me and what kept me, I think, are two different things. Certainly at the time, it was finishing high school, knowing that I wanted to go on to university, not exactly coming from a super affluent family. Both my sister and I, because we graduated at the same time, my father really in my last year of high school said, well, what about the military? Why, you know, you can get a great education. Once you've finished the school, you owe 4 years back to the military and you can make your choices. And given that I was 17 years old, you know, I was like, oh, 4 years, that's 21, four more years, that's 25. Sure. That sounds like a great go. And you're sponsored, they pay for your books, they pay you a salary while you're going to university. And it just seemed like a really good way of getting an education to me.
You're listening to the CO series and I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Today, we're sitting down with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defence Staff and the military's second in command. But around 23, 24, you go, I'm almost free. You had that conversation with yourself, at least theoretically, didn't you?
You know, I didn't particularly because I really just found a niche that I enjoyed being in the military. I really found that sense of service. My background, as I said, was in statistics, but my occupation in the military is communications and electronics engineering. And it's really an enabler type of an occupation. And I really enjoyed the work that I was doing. You are ensuring that people have the networks, the systems, the radars, everything that you need to be able to I would say, you know, fight the modern fight. That provision of those communication systems and services, really, I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the people that I work with. You make such fast friends in the military because you're really, you know, sharing experiences.
So being part of a community is something I like about McGill. I've been there 20 years and I know people for a long time. I do a column for the Globe and Mail every 2 weeks, interview Indigenous leaders. And that's one of the things the Indigenous people really brought across to me, the importance of community. It's more important than money and prestige and those other things. But so the military is a community.
It is. And a community that, gives you, you know, lots of exposure to different things, which is what I loved. You know, sports was really something that I enjoyed. It's not something I have to tell you I was particularly good at in my youth. You know, fitness and being able to bear both the stress and the physical demands of our job means that, you know, being fit and sports are ways of doing that. And so I was always involved with sports teams and volleyball as a sideline to my job in the military, and that another sense of community that you build with people who are like you, who are interested in sports. My sport was volleyball. I played a lot of volleyball. Truly getting different sets of communities is something that bonds you to the work that you're doing, to your sense of purpose, and to the people around you.
So I played volleyball in college as well.
Hey,
were you more of a setter or a spiker?
No, I was a middle blocker. So, okay. You know, I'm quite tall. So I was the middle blocker, and we have local base engagements. We play nationally against the military teams, against each other. And I actually got to play internationally representing Canada in the military sports, the Conseil International du Sport Militaire, which is the International Military Sports Organization. What an honor, what a privilege, how daunting when you are defending against the best power hitter in Europe, who just happens to be in the Croatian military or something like that. So, you know, we recognize the skills that we come with being professional soldiers first. What a great opportunity and amazing coaching that I had as well.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Francis's path to leading the Canadian military.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today we're speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff in Ottawa. So back in the day, you used to work with electronic stuff. At your level, not to be rude, but you're no longer competent.
You are correct.
You are a great leader, but you know, fixing electronic stuff, get someone else in.
That's right. And I'll be honest with you, my role as an officer was never had me down there hands-on fixing equipment. It was much more about building the teams, understanding how we needed to approach it. And the non-commissioned members of our team had the hands-on skills that were associated with the actual equipment maintenance, support, installation, and my role was much more the coordination and the leading of that activity.
So your title now is Vice Chief of the Defense Staff. What does exactly a Vice Chief do?
You know, if you had to sort of simplify what I do on a day-to-day basis, it's really making sure that the program of defense that orients around the military capabilities that we need to have to be able to deliver on the defense policy, that we have that we're acquiring the capabilities that we need for the future and moving forward, that I am supporting the people who have those various roles and responsibilities across the department. And I play a little bit, I would say, of an arbiter for choice when we're needing to make choices amongst investment or prioritization of effort in I would say some of that scheduling and programming of it. There are many people who are involved in the delivery of it, certainly from the services who define the requirements right through to ADM MAT, our materiel group, our information management group, who are actually the project deliverers with industry.
So you're the number two, the chief is the number one. You're an advisor to him, or is it more that you take this part of the responsibility and look after it? How does that work?
So it's a little bit of both. I do have a portfolio that is mine that's actually in part assigned by the deputy minister. As you know, the Department of National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces are a joined group. They're two distinct entities, but the deputy minister is, you know, the head of the Department of National Defense. The chief of the defense staff is the head of the Canadian Armed Forces, and they both report to the minister. But we work together for the delivery of the program. And so I'm accountable to both of them. I'm accountable to the deputy minister as the senior designated official for the delivery for the program management, for the management of our program. And I'm responsible to the CDS to support him and some of our decision-making around the requirements side of the house, coordinating that activity, because we then turn those requirements over to people who will deliver on those requirements for us. So I'm a little bit of a chief of staff to both of them.
You're a lieutenant general. Take us through the ranks of generals.
So the first, two names. So the Army and the Air Force use the same title, and the Navy uses some traditional titles for their general officers, who they call flag officers. So the very first entry into the general officer cadre is Brigadier General or Commodore for the Navy. And the second rank is Major General or Rear Admiral for the Navy. The third rank is Lieutenant General or Vice Admiral for the Navy, and then it's either General or Admiral for the top person, and there's only one.
I thought Major was more senior than Lieutenant.
This is just to make people confused. You are correct. Certainly in the lower officer ranks, Major is two ranks above a Lieutenant, but for, you know, historical purposes, we have switched those around based on history and tradition, and Lieutenant General is a higher rank than Major General.
You're listening to the CO Series, and I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Today, we're sitting down with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff and the military second in command. How many Lieutenant Generals are there in the Canadian military?
There are 10 of us.
So it's a very selective position then, but there's one four-star general, if you would. And that's
the correct. That's General Eyre.
Okay. How many troops does Canada have?
So the Canadian Forces is established to have 71,500 personnel. That's what our establishment is. But we're currently sitting at a fair number less than that, partly through, the shutdown in recruiting and training that we had to do over the last 2 years as a result of COVID, in which for health, you know, preventative health measures, we needed to not have people in such close proximity as we're bringing them in and doing training. And so we stopped that for a period of time. We have recommenced about 8 months ago doing what we call both distributed basic training and entry, as well as basic training and entry at the locations that we traditionally have done it at, but with less volume. So you're not as able to bring in as many people. But even prior to the pandemic, we were not yet at our maximum authorization for personnel. So we are currently, 7,000 to 8,000 personnel short.
Okay.
So there's a room for hierarchy that people salute you and sometimes you give an order because you're in battle. On the other hand, that lieutenant, she has information in her helmet in the battlefield that used to be the general's information. So that changes the role as information it changes the dynamics, does it?
It certainly does, I think. And, you know, also in the same aspect, you can make tactical level decisions that have strategic level impact. And so you really need to understand what it is and that you're doing at a tactical level within a broader context so that you can be able to make those assessments and those judgments moving forward. That means having conversations. That means having a greater understanding of purpose and what it is that you're accomplishing, even in the tactical activities that you're undertaking.
Warfare seems to be much more off battlefield than on the battlefield these days. How does the Canadian military prepare for hybrid conflict, if that makes sense?
No, it does, absolutely. And I think it's a reflection of the world and the society that we have around us. You know, conflict in the old traditional sense, you know, it was quite clear when you were at war with somebody, you know, war was declared. Now, certainly, I would say there is state-sponsored activity that happens around the globe below the threshold of conflict as defined, you know, in the traditional sense. And that happens particularly in the cyber environment, in the information domain, where I would say you see this type of attempts to influence populations or to create advantage economically through intellectual property theft or all of these types of things, which are, if they are state sponsored, certainly I would say activities that we would not necessarily traditionally have seen before. And so what role does the military play in that, I think, is the question. And that is what I think all governments around there are looking at, the instruments of power that nations have to achieve the outcomes that they need for the benefits of their citizens, and adherence to the rules-based international order. I think we are seeing fractures in that around the world as some nation states no longer are abiding by that rules-based international order, which guides the relationships, even in the below the conflict area, guides the relationships between states. And so the role for the military has to be certainly about making sure that we are always ready should we need to respond to the government's requirement for that, I would say, ultimate set of conflict that you have. But you also need to be prepared to defend yourself against below the threshold activities that you may see happening with other states.
So when we think of, you know, Hollywood war movies, like it's boots on the ground with rifles, but it's much more subtle than that these days because of the nature of the world.
Well, it is much more subtle than that. But if you take a look at what's happening in Ukraine today between Russia and Ukraine, you can also see that it is also very much some of the traditional aggression, traditional military instruments of power that are at play, I would say, against, unfortunately, we are seeing, I think, so against some civilian populations, which of course is not in line with the approach and the international guidelines that we have as it pertains to military use of force.
Today, I'm delighted speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO series. Next up, we'll talk about Generation Z and their impact on the military.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO series. Today, we're speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff in Ottawa. When we think about it, a couple of things which are different in terms of important things for the military for Canada are China and the Pacific. And we sometimes think we're an Atlantic country, which we are, but we're also a Pacific country and we're an Arctic country. When we think of the Arctic, it's becoming particularly important given Russia's role in the world right now. But there's also the role of China. Take us through that, how that's evolved the last few years.
I think we've seen changes in a number of aspects, both in the geopolitical environment that we see with nations perhaps being much more aggressive in their behavior, a little less respectful of that rules-based international order, and less bound by the importance that that brings to cohesion between states. But we're also seeing, you know, climate change, and that also brings changes to our north, as we see, you know, greater periods of opening of the Arctic waters. Certainly that brings economic benefits to people who are trying to ship goods around the world. And so our responsibilities and our accountabilities, I think, for sovereignty will therefore change as we counter both changing relationships with in the geopolitical sphere, as well as climate change and how we are going to address that.
So it's a different world than 10 years ago. Is that a fair statement, or is that getting carried away?
No, I think it is a different world than it was 10 years ago. But it's not as though we didn't foresee some of this. It's just accelerating much faster than we thought it would. You know, 10 years ago, we were just seeing, I guess we hadn't quite yet seen the aggression that Russia demonstrated against Ukraine and their taking of Crimea. And that was a bit of a shock for everybody. And certainly, I think there has been an evolution in seeing, I would say, global competition moving forward. And that also has changed the dynamic a little bit. But I think that we have just seen things accelerating in their arrival faster than we would have thought would have come about.
You're listening to the CO Series, and I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Today, we're sitting down with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defence Staff and the military second in command. General, we have Generation Z come along. I just finished a book on it. I work with them. I get the pleasure of teaching them. Are Generation Z a bit different than your generation or my generation?
You know what? I think each of the generations are different because each grows up with different either abilities or constraints that surround them going forward. And so I say that each is different without judgment. I think we are the products of the environment that we grow up in, and it sets expectations, it sets our worldview to some degree. Now, of course, thankfully, all of our worldviews mature as we get older, because I hate to think that, you know, the person that I was at 21 is the person I have to be for my entire life. We do get to evolve and think, but, you know, the environment that forms you, I think, stays with you to some degree going forward. And so, you know, within the military, we see that we have, I would say, a different set of expectations amongst our personnel. The importance, I think, now of, while we've, well, core to our values and ethics is the concept of service before self. You know, it is really a big part of who we are. But equally important is that we are thinking about the needs of individuals and the fact that individuals' needs are very different. You know, our military system was set and formed for the white male, and the needs of the white male within the military that started to evolve very slowly as more women started to enter the Canadian Armed Forces. And if we want to actually have representation within the Canadian Armed Forces, if we want to be representative of our multicultural population, we actually have to make sure that we're creating environments that recognize the needs of people. And people, as you know, you are a professor, are well aware we are intersectional beings. And I'm a mother, I'm a woman, I'm an officer, I'm a volleyball player. I am many things all at the same time. And not being able to be who I am or feel like I can't within a work environment, you know, may make a person feel like, yeah, I don't have my community. We talked about community at the top of your show. You need to have your community, even when your community is maybe different than the community of the person that you're working with, but you have this shared community by both being in the military. And so I think we have to evolve in the military to recognize the diversity of the people that we currently have and the people that we want to have within the Canadian Armed Forces.
So you've been in the military a long time. So in some ways, it's like systematic racism or systematic sexism. It's not that they were evil as much as it was just we didn't understand.
So there's certainly a large part of, I would say, our organization and our culture that is about systemic blindness to the bias that we have. There is also a real important culture change agenda that we're pursuing that is about making sure that those things that we have just done because this is the way we've always done them and they don't make sense and they stifle individual voices, we have to change that part of the culture and make sure that that we're creating some fundamental changes that the you know, the sexual misconduct that we've seen within the military is certainly one of those key battles, as well as the broader culture change, the power dynamic issue that is important for a structure like ours, where there needs to be decision-making in certain, I would say in certain contexts, decision-making, rapid response, quick action, but you don't have to have that at all points in time. And yet why behave as an organization as if there's no ability to reflect, seek input, think about the needs of other organizations when you're not in that temporal requirement for, I would say, for decisive, no questioning action. Moving forward. So we've got to figure out as an organization how we preserve those things that are critically important to us and that we value, and how we adjust our leadership, how we adjust our approaches to make sure that we're creating a healthier culture in the Canadian Armed Forces.
What's the difference being in command and being a leader? Is there a difference between those two words?
Absolutely, there's a complete difference. You know, command is a responsibility that is assigned to you for the execution of a function and a responsibility for a task and a group of people, whereas leaders are everywhere. Leaders happen at all levels. Leaders happen within peers. Leaders happen within groups. Informal leaders stand up. There are people who are leaders and are incredibly well respected. So there is a difference between them, and it's great if you are both at the same time. If you are in command, you certainly must be a leader.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defence Staff. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. Next up, we'll talk about the General's work-life integration.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defence Staff. Francis, are you more of an introvert or an extrovert?
I think I'm more of an introvert, and that's because I define that by how do I reestablish my inner balance. And some people reestablish it by going out and engaging with others, and I love to do that. But when it's time for me to just, you know, take a breath and regroup, for me that's done in quiet. So it's done with a book, it's done with nature, it is that's how I guess I recharge. And so by definition, then I call myself an introvert, although I certainly love interacting with people.
I think your definition is absolutely right. But you're the second most senior general in the country. Like when you go to a lot of rooms, people stand, they know who you are. The young people particularly are in awe, you know, of who you are. It's not just you, General, but it's your title. Like, so you can't sit there in the corner and be by yourself and ignore everyone, because you're the general.
Well, I think that's exactly right. But that's not when you're recharging, right? That's not when you are having your own. That's when you're actually out and engaging and seeking that input and sharing your thoughts and bringing the team along. That's an important part of what I do, and it's an important part of being a leader. But for me, you know, on a Saturday to have a coffee and a book on a Saturday morning, it's a little slice of heaven.
How do you balance a very demanding job with being a mother as well? And how old are the kids these days?
So I have one son. He's 28 years old, and he has a baby.
Okay.
So he has a 7-month-old daughter, and so my balancing, I guess, of my parental responsibilities now come from a grandparenting perspective, moving forward. But certainly, I would say in the early days, it was a bit of a balancing act. My son spent some days on the weekend drawing on a whiteboard with markers in my office. As he entertained himself coloring there. And I have to tell you, the advent of mobile communications devices was a godsend for me, so that maybe at 3:30 on a Wednesday afternoon, I could take my, at the time, BlackBerry, go watch his basketball game, but still be connected back to the office going forward. So I think both through technology, which, you know, you have to learn to shut off as well, you can try to find some of these balances.
Did you work from home for months?
I didn't.
So you're able to come, well, given what you do, that's perfectly sensible. How do you stay in shape these days? Volleyball, or do you go to the gym, or what do you do in your better moments?
You are asking the million-dollar question, which is that I should be in better shape than I am. I'll be honest with you. I certainly think, you know, it is, as somebody who has always played team sports, part of when you're feeling like, oh, do I really want to do this? It was the idea of playing on a team, playing with other people, not letting the team down, that keeps you going. And then once you get there, you're into it, right? You're enjoying it, what it is that you do. Certainly in COVID, as things have shut down, that the capacity to find the self motivation, because it's just you and a treadmill, or you and an elliptical machine, certainly has been more challenging. My knees these days do not let me play volleyball anymore, unfortunately. But I'm an avid terrible golfer.
You're listening to the CO Series, and I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Today, we're sitting down with General Francis Allen, Canada's Vice Chief of the Defense Staff and the military second in command. I was playing hockey last night, but I can't play volleyball because of my knees anymore. But hockey, it's a different motion. And it's interesting. Gretzky said, don't go where the puck is, go where it's going to be. We all know where it's going. We just can't get there anymore. So it's kind of like the Canadians on incredible slow speed. But when we go see the Canadians, you go, these guys are so good. Like, it's unbelievable. Is volleyball played better today than 30 years ago? Like, are they generally at a higher level?
Yes. And the rules have changed over time, too, though. You know, we went from having six people on a court to having a libero, which is a player who is a backcourt specialist who rotates in and out. Before, you only served in one part of the court. Now you can serve along the entire backcourt. So the rules of the game have changed. It makes it much more fast paced. It's thrilling. It's exciting. When we have the World Volleyball League come here to Ottawa, I always buy tickets, because it's just amazing to watch the level of play that they play at.
You and I probably couldn't play at the same level back in the day. Well, there we are.
Brain every now and then thinks I can.
Yeah, no, that's good. What's something that excites you these days?
You know, what excites me is the opportunities that we are slowly going to open back up again. From an access to people and an access to the things that we used to do. I used to travel a lot, and that certainly has not been the case in the last little while. And so I am looking forward to, I think, the opportunity to start to be able to have some of the global interaction, the travel that we used to do before. And we have to be patient. It's a slow coming a little bit, but things are just so much better than they were just even 18 months ago.
What book are you reading right now?
Interestingly, I'm reading a book called How to Have Tender Conversations. It's actually about how to have difficult conversations. And the author chose the word tender because it's about recognizing that you're talking to people in what might be some incredibly difficult times, or about topics that are super difficult, perhaps to broach with people. So it's just an interesting book. I heard about it on a podcast, actually, and went out and I got the book because I just thought it was incredibly interesting.
Probably a woman author from the word tender.
It was a doctor, a female.
So it's interesting. When we were young, men and women were totally different, which we still are. But, you know, in a sense that evolved, where men and women, it's not good male or female leadership. It's just called good leadership.
That's right. And I think that they, what you see are adoptions of maybe traits or characteristics that previously had been assigned to a gender that we now know really are beneficial for everyone to have, to relate to people, to move forward, as well as, you know, traits previously that were assigned to the male gender, decisiveness, I don't want to say aggression, but certainly aggression. There are times for all of these qualities, I think, to potentially inform your leadership style.
Now, I did a research about 10 years ago, followed around a day, one-on-one for a day, senior women leaders with their permission, otherwise it's stalking, and came out with some conclusion, but it seems that there's been an evolution where we're still men and women, and there's, you know, other genders as well, but there's just a sense that, well, we used to assign, I think it's your point, we used to assign this to a particular gender, this is just good leadership, and maybe women are slightly better at some things than men on average, but men have got to be tender, to go to the title of the book, men have got to think about the emotional side, and maybe we have a bit of a blind spot, but it's just called being an adult and learning.
You know, I think that we can all learn from characteristics that we see in people around us. Particularly, you know, I always admire actually the qualities in others that I don't have. I am not a terribly handy person. I just always admire people who have skills in woodworking, plumbing, drywalling. You know, I think folks that have skills that I don't have, I admire them greatly.
General Allen, thank you for joining us today. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, our show producer, Youssef Sahoni, and our scriptwriter, Stephanie Richet. Thank you for tuning into the CEO series. À la prochaine.